aéreos de ustedes que continúan.
Nous espérons que vous avez passé un bon moment sur notre vol et espérons vous revoir.
For those of you continuing on, we wish you a safe and pleasant journey. If this is your final destination, we welcome you home.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast where we, Sandra Andres and Laura Bach, invite fellow artists, norm breakers, researchers, scientists, and spiritual leaders to share vulnerable stories and profound insights about how we all can feel more at home with ourselves.
Together with our guests, we will examine how to break the behavioral patterns that make us feel stuck and explore how to live a more joyful, connected, and sustainable life from the inside and out.
Because we do know one thing, maybe now more than ever. Regardless of our gender identity, profession, or nationality, we are more alike than we are different. And often it is a crisis or a challenge that cracks our hearts wide open and brings us closer to ourselves.
We are so excited to have you here with us. Welcome to Coming Home.
There, exciting to be back. How are you doing today, Sandra?
You mean what kind of energy is vibrating in me today?
Oh, I see what you did there. You're referring to how one of our guests in this episode is describing emotions, aren't you?
Yep. Well, today I actually feel like I would have needed to take some time to take deep breaths. I have a pact with myself to do some kind of breathing exercise every day to check in with myself, but today, because you and I have been working so intensely, I didn't take that time. So let's see. I feel a little bit tired, but also giddy.
Oh.
Like excited. And I think it is because this is a very special episode for me. All episodes are special, but why I'm saying this is because I get to introduce you, our listeners, to two of my dear, dear friends who are joining us in this episode. Our storyteller guest is American actor LaMonica Garrett, and our guest of expertise is Canadian actress and acting coach Carrie Keene. They are both based in California, and we got to know each other in 2013, and we'll get into that in the episode.
We will. And what you as a listener is about to hear, we feel is so important and very, very inspiring. We're getting into the consequences of not wanting to make people uncomfortable, of making yourself smaller than you are, and very importantly, the power of breath.
There's so much good here. So without further ado, I'll jump into introducing our first guest. LaMonica Garrett started out as a football player, but found his way to acting after moving to Los Angeles, where he actually started delivering packages to different movie studios. You may have seen him in one of the many TV shows to which he has contributed with his talent, such as Sons of Anarchy, Designated Survivor, or as the DC Comics character Mar Nouveau, the Monitor, in Elseworlds, Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow, to name a few. In 2021, he was cast in 1883, the spin-off series of the popular show Yellowstone, starring Kevin Costner. In 1883, LaMonica stars opposite Sam Elliott, Faith Hill, and Tim McGraw, and the show has gotten a rating of no less than 9.1 on IMDb, the International Movie Database, which is an extraordinary rating. And I can tell you, it really deserves it. It is amazing. And so is LaMonica in it. Hey, LaMonica, welcome.
Welcome.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm good. A little tired. The baby was up a little late, or early. So it was one of those nights. All good.
Oh, how early?
3 a.m. and he stayed up.
Thank God you love them, right?
Yeah, that's the only way it happens.
Well, then we're extra grateful that you're here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking to you. You're actually in California.
Yeah, Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just have to say, you're on such a roll right now. Like, you just go from one thing to the next, and it's so exciting to see. Like, I want to just tell our listeners that you and I, we're old friends, and we've known each other for several years now. That's why it's so special that you're here.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, we've, like, shared so many, you know, vulnerable moments together because we have been really practicing acting together and worked a lot together. And then we have Laura, who doesn't know you at all.
At all.
I'm a fan of Laura's, though, and I'm a fan of the show.
Well, it's so exciting. I can't wait to sort of hear your stories and get to know you a little bit more together with the listeners.
There was some words that came to mind when, you know, you said that you can come on the show. And I was like, what signifies La Monica for me? And I just want to, you know, line those words up because I think they describe you. At least that's from my point of view. So the words that came to me were talented as hell, committed, disciplined, team player, generous, passionate.
We're still going. Okay, keep going.
There's one more.
200 more words. Just
one more. I just have the dictionary here. No, I'm kidding. Gentle soul. I really, really am so inspired by you. You hadn't worked for that long when we met.
Mm-hmm.
And it just started to pick up like crazy. Yeah. But we are going to go back to the very beginning. Or at least somewhere in the beginning. So let's listen to the first story. You ready?
Yeah.
He's sitting in the car and has finally managed to roll down the window. The warm, humid winds of Mississippi are caressing his six-year-old face. It will only get hotter and more humid from here on, but he is smiling. Just thinking of playing outside and all the endless possibilities that summer has to offer makes him giddy. What lies ahead is another summer of adventure together with his brother. They will be staying at their grandparents' place in Jackson, the town where their own mom and dad grew up, and he's familiar with it by now. As a six-year-old, he's just a bit confused by what his parents just said. He's not sure what the word hyper-aware means, but he listened intently when they talked, and he understands what look around you and be aware of your surroundings mean. His parents turned to him and his brother. They had put those serious faces on and talked in what felt like forever. Despite the ants in his pants, he sat still and tried hard to listen to every word, to really focus. He could tell that that was expected of him. Make sure you blend in as much as possible and don't ever bring too much attention to yourself. Whatever you do, don't make eye contact with white folks. Just keep to yourselves and be aware. Be aware. He nodded because he will be. He promised.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
That's a tough talk for a six-year-old.
Mm. It really is. How do you feel when you're listening to it now? What comes up for you?
I guess it's second nature to me now. You know, I have a son now, so the world's better than it was back then. I'm still going to have some talks with him, but hopefully it's nothing like to that level. We live in a better environment now, so, you know, we'll see, but yeah, that's just what I grew up with. That was our normal.
Mm.
Being 6 years old and having to deal with these things, did you understand what it was about? Had you at that point experienced things that made you aware of it already?
I hadn't. You know, my parents, that was their reality. You know, I was there for the summer. Uh-huh. So it was, I get to dip in and dip back out to San Francisco, where it was all our neighbors were different ethnicities. It was a like a Benetton kind of thing. Like we
Okay, so that
different.
Was different living there.
Mm. Yeah, it was different there. So going to Mississippi, I would go weeks without seeing white people at all, like from where we lived. And when you did see white people, it was that conversation had to come back in your head and just be aware, because my parents' reality was, you know, they it was the civil rights era. It was Martin Luther King. It was Rosa Parks. It was in the heart of the South. Mm. And if you didn't follow those rules when they were little, you didn't come home that night or any other night, and people just didn't see you again. So it was their harsh reality, and, you know, they were trying to keep us safe, and that was their main job.
What else did your parents teach you? I know that you've talked to me about that before, that there were certain things that they valued highly when you grew up.
Self-discipline. You know, that's why it still resonates with me. It's something that's a staple for me. They would tell me anything you want in life, anything worth having, you have to have self-discipline to attain it. You have to sacrifice what you want for what you want most. So that self-discipline was always embedded in me.
The awareness that we heard about in the story. Was there any downside to that? Like in terms of when you grew up and what you thought of it as a kid?
Looking back at it, that hyper-awareness of your surroundings never really allows you to take your armor off or to let your guard down, because you always feel like some proverbial shoe is going to drop and you don't know where it's coming from. So you're hyper-present, but it's not a good, you know, especially for the business that we're in, like you got to have soft eyes and not hard eyes. And we had hard eyes growing up, and it's hard to just shake that.
Can you explain what you mean with hard eyes and soft eyes?
Soft eyes, like, you know, seeing everything around you and noticing things that you might not notice if you weren't focused on one thing. I'm focused on danger.
Okay.
And, you know, like when I still have some of this, we'll go to a restaurant. I have to sit with my back to the wall facing the door.
Really?
When I go to places, I look to see where the exits are in case something happens. Like, those are hard looks. Those are hard eyes. Like, discipline to see danger. It's kept me out of trouble. That we've had multiple experiences. You're out in the LA dating scene. You meet people. You go home with people, and the environment isn't right. You meet a girl. You go home with them, and you get set up by whoever is in her environment. You know, it's
set up. Sorry, in what way?
She might call some friends that she knows in her neighborhood and says, hey, we got some actor guys coming. They got money. We'll be there in 30 minutes. So we get there. God. You're parked outside and some guys come to rob you. And that you can give them everything you want and hope they don't shoot you. I've had a couple friends that have gotten killed in that same case scenario that I've done a number of times. You know, so it's you just... Those are hard eyes. Like, you're looking for what car, who's sitting in their car when you drive up to a neighborhood you don't recognize. Who's looking at me? Who's around? You know, it's just, it's embedded in you.
Yeah.
Hard eyes.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that. How have you dealt with that?
Just working on myself, knowing that it doesn't serve me. And that was a big thing me and Carrie worked on. What's great about Carrie is everyone goes there for different reasons. They're working on different things about themselves, and it's not so much the acting and the craft, like that's a part of it, but it's, you have to break out of your own habits and your own, you know, things that don't serve you well. And that was one of mine, and that's something that we worked on.
I'm going to tell our listeners that Carrie is Carrie Keene, our next guest in this episode, and the acting coach of both LaMonica and me. And that's how we met, actually. She's amazing, and she's helped a lot of people in getting to the kind of truth of themselves, I would say.
Yep.
But that takes some time. It really does to open up.
It's not a quick fix. It's a hard thing to shake.
Yeah, it's interesting having a completely different life growing up elsewhere, but also recognizing I disciplined myself so much with my impediment that I had, and that hypervigilance, which for a completely different reason, but I recognized that so much, to have those like eyes in the back. In my case, I was afraid of getting bullied all the time, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing with that, you develop these mechanisms for a reason, right? To protect you, or even teach your children to protect them, and they serve you. So at one point, they're really, really necessary to in order to survive and like sustainably, right? And then at one point in your life, it doesn't serve you anymore. Understanding that, okay, now I'm aware of it. And now, how the fuck am I going to change it?
If you're aware of it, that's the first huge step.
Yeah.
I don't need that armor right now. This is safe. Mm-hmm. So now I could have soft eyes to look at the beauty around me and to take things in, to let things affect me, to see the beauty in the area that I'm in, enjoy my family. You know, like I don't need the hard eyes right now.
Well, I really like that, hard eyes and soft eyes.
Yeah, me too. It's but it's the constant practice of that, reminding ourselves. That actually brings me to your journey has been that you went into sports. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, you know, growing up, I was a middle child, so I had a lot of time to myself. We had a YMCA, like a rec center near my house, and that's where I would spend a lot of time. My parents worked a couple jobs, and I just got involved in sports, and I started noticing how it made me feel. So it was good for confidence. It was a confidence builder because I was good at sports. And I started making more friends, and I started getting positive attention from sports. And then, you kind of figure out, like, you can get a scholarship. Sports could take you far. We grew up like right behind Candlestick Park where the San Francisco 49ers play. And we were so close to that where if there was a touchdown, we could hear the crowd yelling like from where we were in our, you know, in our place. And then my dad took us to games, and I get to see all these NFL people and people cheering them, you know, cheering them on. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. I want to be one of those guys on that field. And what do I have to do to get that? And my dad's like, well, you gotta be disciplined. You gotta practice. You gotta do, all right, I'll do that. And it just gave me some kind of focus and drive to go after. A lot of kids don't have any passion for anything. Just be passionate about something and go after it, whether you fail or whether it, you know, just be passionate and go after it. And that was the first thing I was passionate about before acting. So I went after it. You know, and it didn't work out in the end, but it led me to where I'm at now. But yeah, sports was a huge part of what shaped me.
Yeah. And to me, you just embody this discipline that a lot of athletes have that I've always admired so much, that you get a lot from that mindset.
Yeah, the work ethic, like the work you put into it when no one's watching is what you're going to benefit most from it when they are watching.
So good. The discovery of acting, how did that come to you?
I don't know if it was like one thing. I had a bunch of smaller moments. And I just know like family time when we were sitting around with, as a family watching old Westerns or old TV show, like how much fun we had together. And that was something else. Like the people in that, in this big screen that's on the floor bring families together. And I want to be a part of that. You know, I don't know how or whatever, but I just know how I feel when we're all here watching our favorite shows. I would like to be the reason people get together and have family time. And then when I was like 14, 15, we moved down to Los Angeles, and you're going to school with different actresses and different actors. Like the sports was something tangible to me, something I could see before. And now I'm seeing actors that I saw on TV. They're like, oh, wow, maybe I can do this after football one day. And when football was over, it was like, all right, back to, you know, the plan B.
Yeah.
Going to acting.
And you just started to take classes in LA?
I went to college in Ohio. And then once football, it didn't happen for me. Moved back to LA and getting acting classes. Starting from scratch. I was doing commercials. I was doing print jobs. I was doing background on TV shows and commercials, just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the second story.
He is sitting across from the station manager, George. Having just put his dreams of playing professional football in the NFL aside,
he's dancing his way for the touchdown.
He
is pursuing the dream of becoming an actor. New dream, new possibilities. Wait, did he just say that he is hired?
Yes, he actually did. Amazing.
George is smiling back at him. He could tell that he loved his enthusiasm right off the bat. The fact that they both have roots in Tennessee didn't hurt either. Yes. Now he will be able to pay his bills and pay for his acting classes. Grateful and excited, he thanks the big guy. Just as he is about to open the door to leave, George stops him. I just want to give you some advice, he says. With a loving voice, George explains how he really loved his energy, excitement, and passion for the job as a courier. But you may want to tone down some of that and maybe sit back in your chair during future interviews. Someone who isn't as big as me or who might look different than us might get intimidated or feel threatened by your size and energy. George is a big man, and George knows. One of the many car conversations with his parents flash before his eyes. In an instant, he is reminded. Being an adult now, out on his own in the world, yet the same rules apply. Be aware.
That was that reminder, me, first job, out on my own, the real world. And, you know, I was there for like 3 years working, and it's oddly enough, my route from FedEx was the Warner Brothers lot. So I was delivering to like Everybody Loves Raymond, Friends, the Drew Carey Show, ER, like all these, you know, Clint Eastwood and Matrix and all these Warner Brother productions.
Wow.
Trying to figure out how can I get on that side.
I went in.
I need to get out of this truck.
Yeah, exactly.
And in there with you guys. But that talk with George was a reminder. And it was the first time happening in California. Like having that talk in Mississippi is one thing. Mm. Having that talk years later in LA is something that's different. Like I'll be on sets and I'll have castmates that go off or they're just unhappy about something and they lose it. And nothing happens. And there was one time where I kind of got pissed off about something half the level of what they did. And I got people coming, hey man, like, is there going to be a problem? Like, nah, man, we'll fix it and we'll move on. And I got HR calling me up. Into the angry black guy.
Oh, and it's like, frustrating, to say the least.
So I have to, that discipline of biting my tongue and keeping the lid on, there's a chance I'm not going to be viewed the same for losing my temper.
I was just wondering whether or not you feel like you have had to make yourself smaller than you really are.
You have to. There's less pressure on you if you just make yourself smaller. And I had to find a way to use that in my acting, but also navigating through life. Like little things, like you're getting the older heads from like around the neighborhood kind of telling you about adult living for brothers. And he's like, on your driver's license, make sure you smile. Make sure you show your teeth on your driver's license, because when they pull you over and you look angry and that's what they're going by, you want to show them, hey, I'm just a friendly guy. When things are happening in society and when people just like, I'm tired of it, there's certain people that saying, what are you tired of? Like, I don't get it, because that's not their world.
Yeah. Mm.
But the people that are in that world, they've been living this for a long time. So they're fed up by it. So it might seem like an overreaction on the media or the news or something, but you're tired.
Oh, yeah.
Overall, like, I don't let too much get to me. You're representative, what I present. Mm. And a lot of that is in me, but a lot of that is like having to bite your tongue and just smile and nod.
It's quite amazing that you have dealt with it that way.
But it, like in most professions, your representative is enough. Like the person you present yourself to be, that's in most things that people do, that gets them through life.
Yeah.
We can't do that as actors.
Nope.
So, you get confronted with it at some point. But
That was working for a while.
Yeah, I got confronted with it.
Yeah. Should we listen to that story?
Yeah. That was a tough talk.
Yeah. Let's listen to it. Yeah.
It is pilot season, and the television networks and production companies are auditioning actors for new TV shows. For the first time ever, he feels like he actually has a shot at landing a bigger role. He has been on a roll for some time, worked a lot, booking several smaller but significant roles back to back. Now is his time. The big league. He is ready.
And action.
And boom. Just like that, he got a great audition right away. Didn't even have to do a first audition for the casting director. He was just requested straight to producers for a project that had already gotten a lot of buzz and auditioned directly for them. It felt great. And he's still buzzing from the good vibes. That's when he gets the call. It is the next day and his manager has a message from casting. They are informing him that he won't be moving forward on this one. The word is that if this was a guest star, he might be considered. But for an every week series regular player, more of him needs to show up for the role. He had a presence when he walked into the room. But during the read, that presence disappeared. He's listening, trying to take it all in. It hurts.
Oof, that is rough to hear.
Yeah, especially when you've been on a roll, you're doing well, like you know, you just feel progress being made. And there were smaller roles, granted, but you just feel like I'm ready for more. Mm. And there's a reason why you haven't gotten more. But that was the first time. Thank you, Jennifer Cooper, for telling my manager that. She was the casting director.
Yeah, when they're honest, that's good, right?
Yeah, like let us know so we know what's going on, so we don't just keep, you know, doing the exact same thing and expecting different results. That's something personal. Yeah. That I had to address.
Do you feel like that was sort of the flip side of making yourself smaller?
I have an intense look, I guess I've been told. So if I'm staring or if I'm engaged, it comes across as intimidating. I notice when people are uncomfortable that I'm talking to. So that's another way of making myself smaller to make them comfortable. Mm. Not to in too much eye contact, to be imposing, to engage. It was like kind of what George told me. Keep your head down, the eye contact. The thing my parents told me is you don't want people feeling uncomfortable around you.
Yeah.
And in this business, your eyes are everything. You have to give your eyes. And that was something that was hard for me to grasp and to accept. And it's something I remember Carrie telling me in one of the classes. We had this conversation in class after that happened. And she said something along the lines was, if they're intimidated or if they're uncomfortable, that's their problem. You show up.
I had exactly the same experience with a job where I was definitely in front row for the part. And they called my agent and said exactly the same. Like, we loved her energy. She came into the room. She was that part. And then she started saying the lines and doing a thing. And there was just something missing. We don't trust that she's able to bring herself on set with what we need that role to be. So that was that. And then the talk with my agent afterwards, because I have that politeness syndrome as well. I know it's very different from your story, but it's the same tree for me. It's like and being a woman, obviously, when you go in there and you're told that you're difficult, just saying your truth and your opinion. But so I think I've made myself smaller than I was, definitely. And I got that. Just show up with whatever's in you, bring it forth, do your thing, be fucking brave, because that's going to land you the part. That's going to be something that people can mirror themselves in.
It's the same tree. It's just a different branch, like how you're supposed to act. Women are supposed to be. So you have to practice not doing that in every situation you're in. But if you've been shying away from authenticity for so long, now you have to make it a point to just be yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's the work.
One thing is the change from within you, but society's got to change as well. So we really need each other in this. Mm. It's just so incredibly important.
Yeah, just, you know, talking it out, and it's just understanding people, and you fear what you don't understand.
We need each other to remind each other of this, asking questions and daring to be open.
Wise words.
That's exactly, that's what this podcast is about. Like, that's what we why we want to have these conversations. Because just hearing somebody else talking about this, it helps a lot.
It really it does.
Yeah, it's you know, you're not isolated, or your situation isn't unique, where you can't get out of it. Like,
you're not alone.
You're not alone.
No,
I just have to say that I just finished this incredible series that you are have been doing. It's such beautiful work, really, really inspiring. And with our whole conversation in mind, I just want to bring this up because. What a role for you to play, considering everything, the way that you've been conditioned and history in the United States and what you've gotten to do here in this series. Please, can you tell them about 1883, our listeners, and about your character, Thomas?
Yeah, 1883, it's a prequel to Yellowstone. So it's pretty much 1800s Oregon Trail. Immigrants coming in from Europe and trying to find a better place, how they settled land in the West, the harshness of life at that time, what comes along with being on that trail. And my character was Thomas. He was born a slave. He ran away when he was 12. He joined the Buffalo Soldiers during the Civil War. And being a black man in the 1800s, it was tough. And the way Taylor Sheridan wrote it, and not just my character, but all the characters. It was a beautiful story, but it was hard, it was gritty, and it was honest and it was truthful.
Yeah.
And we were shooting in Amarillo, Texas. And every day driving to work, I would pass by cotton fields. Mm. And I've never seen cotton fields. My parents worked in cotton fields when they were growing up. And slaves, you know, everything that went with cotton fields back in the day. So one day on the way to work, I pulled the car over and I just wanted to take it in. And I got out and I was picking cotton. And it was a spiritual moment. It was a heavier moment than I had anticipated it to be. Like, I'm here. Who knows who did these fields back, you know, not too long ago. But me being able to pick this cotton, put it in my car, then end up going to a job that I love and not forced to be here through being whipped, through being beaten, through being hung, like what they went through for me to be able to do what I do. It's gratitude. And Thomas, the way Taylor wrote his character, me 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think I could have did this role, but over time and over like life happening to me, having a son that was born a couple years ago, working on myself with things that I needed to work on myself with, it helped me to bring this character to life. And I think timing is everything. Everything happens for a reason. The jobs you don't get, when you do get that right job, you look back and you're like, oh, wow, you know, I'm so glad I didn't get that other job. Where at the time you thought that was the only thing in life that mattered.
Yeah.
You know, it all happens for a reason, and timing and just working on yourself. And now I'm ready to take on whatever.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that.
That's great advice. Thank you so much. And please, people, don't miss this series because it's incredible. Really is. And when you're saying that you wanted to become an actor, you think because the whole family was gathering in front of the TV, like this is that kind of series.
That was one of those shows where people would hit me up from all over the world saying like, this is the one show they would watch on Sunday with their families. Because it was just
beautiful.
So many
lives.
And it's like, oh, wow. Like I tear up when I hear that. Go. That's all I wanted to do.
You're tearing up. It's beautiful. Thank you. I'm so proud of you. Congratulations.
Thank you for being here
with us this whole time. And you know, best of luck. I can't wait to see what you're doing next.
Thanks for having me,
y'all.
Me
neither.
Love you, my friend.
Love y'all.
Ciao.
Canadian-born actress and coach Carrie Keene is our guest of expertise today. She has performed on stage and in film and TV for over 30 years. On the screen, she has starred opposite John Lithgow, Vanessa Redgrave, Peter Fonda, and John Cassavetes, to name a few. And now, since many years back, Carrie is based in California. She is the artistic director and founder of White Buffalo Theater Company in Los Angeles and coaches actors to really embody their roles and master the craft of storytelling. Hello, Carrie.
Hello and welcome.
Hi, Laura. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. So good to have you with us.
Thank you.
You're joining us from Sherman Oaks in Los Angeles, California.
I am.
I'm so excited that you're joining us because we are friends and we started working together like some years ago now. I had just moved to Los Angeles, basically, and I heard about this amazing acting coach just randomly from another actor. And then that was you. You were just approaching the craft in a different way than any other acting teacher and coach I've had. And it really helped me because what you do is you bring in breath work, and you really gave me and the other actors that you work with such amazing exercises that is really about embodiment. Like, I see you as not only an acting coach, but an embodiment teacher in many ways.
Well, it becomes very important for actors to have the original breathing apparatus restored so that their bodies, minds, and spirit come into harmony. And it came to me after many years of acting that although I was working constantly, I wasn't feeling like I was allowing the full experience of the character I found within me. So I started to study with books I read, but mostly just a day-to-day practice with the ancient art of toning, basically just vibrating the vowels through your body and opening up and getting the molecules of your body dancing and opening up to the deepest part of your breath, which needs restoration because we are born breathed. And as the world has its way with us, whether it's our upbringing or the people in our life, we start tightening that diaphragm and not allowing our full experience of ourselves or our world. So when I meet most actors, that diaphragm is already tight. And so
it sure was for me.
In releasing that with the exercises and sending, I mean, medicine uses sound all the time for healing. Sound is something. We don't need machines. We've got this in our voices so that the more the voice is in tune with the full experience, it reveals us rather than what we're used to, and that is presenting ourselves. So our presentation, or we call it the personality, whatever you want to call it, is a manifestation of all of these adjustments we make to get attention, to fit in. Sometimes that attention is being rebellious, but at least it gets people's energy going toward. Because, I mean, the baby needs food, shelter, water, and mostly it needs attention. It needs to be seen. It needs to be loved. So whatever we do to get that attention is where our presentation starts to develop and still develops until it's in our way. Now, because I work with actors, that small presentation can be delightful. And the package of the visual and the presentation and all of that can be the very thing that an actor is hired for. So you see actors making careers of just playing that, what I call the small self or the small I. It's your small identification rather than in the craft of acting, opening up to all of the myriad of characters that live inside of us.
That is so interesting what you're saying there. And also I'm thinking, I feel that many people I speak to have the same issue. They feel like they show up with a version of themselves that they have been, somehow been taught that that's liked. Okay, so I can show up with this version because normally this version is liked. And then they have all these other bits of them that they don't show. So they don't feel like they live a life fully themselves. So it goes for both acting, I'm thinking, like bringing up characters and
very
using yourself.
So.
But everyone, right? Everyone.
That small eye is hanging on for dear life and keeping you in that cage that it has accomplished certain things with. That personality has gotten either love or some kind of attention. And it's hanging on for dear life and it's terrified of change. It's very scared that it will come out and somebody again will say, no, too much, not enough. I mean, it's afraid that. So you understand where that comes from. But at some point, it starts really standing in your way.
And that's what we talked with Monica about as well. You know, the conditioned, different things have conditioned us in a certain way. Our background, race, gender, you know, we create our own little survival mode. And there's that control of the diaphragm, like you're saying, when in this case, when we're talking about breath.
The fuel is the breath. And the emotional experience of life, emotion being in motion. And if we keep those emotions moving, then they transmute from one, like the baby will scream and then laugh and then cry. And there's no stoppage. Obviously, in living in the civilization, we have to sort of, we have to control certain things physically and sometimes emotionally, but if we can acknowledge the truth of what we're feeling moment to moment and keep it moving through us, then we never get stuck and clogged down. In other words, people hang on to anger. Oh, it's so destructive because anger is just the word we've given to suppressed energy. Lots of stuff that we've never allowed ourselves to express. Especially women. Apparently, we weren't supposed to express anger. Men aren't supposed to cry.
Exactly.
That's why change has to come from the foundation up. And the foundation is the river that connects us to the universe. And that is the breath. The breath will reconnect you to your instinct, to your impulses, to your engagement in life. Rather than us being cut off, controlling, and trying to present ourselves as something, someone that knows. we know, I know. Actors will say, I hear you. And I go, I don't think so.
Nope.
Well, you're trying to help them. Then they go, I know. Yep. I don't. I don't think you do because I don't.
Yeah. I definitely
so join
been one
the
of
club.
Those. Yep.
Come on over here where you don't know. It's a lot more fun.
But I think
it's because
a question.
So much more fun.
It is. But it's also, as we talked about before, it's very scary. And I think that's one of the things, the reason why you're not doing it. And I think for many, it's subconscious. For me, it was because the things that you have suppressed, being sad or crying or anger, they have to somehow, as you say, flow freely. So it's sort of the subconscious knowing that that has to surface, right? So that has to somehow pass through. That's so scary when you don't really know what's going to come up. And I think one of the things is that you feel like it's going to be like this forever, right? And then that's why what you're saying, Carrie, is so important, because talking about what lies after the release is that freedom, that feeling of freedom. And I think that's how we're going to inspire each other to do the work.
And it never lasts that long either.
No.
Like these emotions, like we're talking about transmuting emotions.
The experience of emotion being just vibrational responses to encounters and events. And if we don't put the labels on those emotions, we realize that it is all just this flow of energy, and it just vibrates differently depending on each of our experiences of encountering people, events. It's just that. And so we stop thinking of a bad emotion or a good emotion, an allowable emotion as opposed to not allowed. It's just the experience of being alive. It's just that. Holding on to that presentation is exhausting. It takes so much energy because it's based on tension. The tension between what really wants to be expressed and what you're allowing to be expressed.
That makes me think about what we have come back to that several times in this podcast already, this thing of putting the armor on. We talked to Monica about that as well.
Uh-huh.
And and just that tension where it's getting stored in the body, that controlled breath or holding. Yeah. And I know, Carrie, that you say, I always go to the body when you're coaching and just where is this person holding tension, maybe? Uh-huh. Can you please explain that?
That motion, that pulling away from a certain part of your body, has this memory that you need to keep moving through you so it has no power. Maria, which was one of my wonderful students, she wouldn't mind because I've told this story a million times. She'd been used to the streets where she had to sort of defend her. And all I'd have to do, I would just lift her hand off her hip and the tears would come and back on her hip. Now, I think that in teaching the body things it's not conscious of, like with LaMonica, the folding in of the body and the not looking at the eyes, just in the enjoyment of interaction. I mean, this is essential for actors, but I think is pretty good for all human beings, especially now. Whatever your politics, whatever your beliefs, whatever the color of your skin, looking at each other in the eye, softening our eyes and receiving and giving of our truths. I think it's pretty powerful.
It's very powerful. It's so powerful and it's essential right now. Yeah,
essential. And it really just comes. I know it sounds simple. 20 minutes of a day, really restoring your original breathing apparatus.
We're all about being practical here. Like, how do we translate this? How do we translate coming home to ourselves? What does that mean? What can we do? And that is very much breathing.
Yeah,
it is.
Can you share some hands-on advice in terms of an exercise you can try at home?
Here's a simple thing. Just so that you reconnect, I call it vacuuming out the lungs. But because we don't fully breathe, like releasing all the breath from the lungs, it holds on to a pocket of very, very dirty, stagnant air. So this is something that I call really just getting to the bottom. So make a noise because I think that helps, but expel every little bit of the breath in your lungs till it's almost excruciating and you can't stand it any longer. So in exhaling it, I don't know whether the audience will hear, but really something like this. Still exhaling. And then in through the nose. And it absolutely falls into the bottom of your lungs. You'll feel your ribs expand. You'll feel your tummy go out. So do three or four of those and you realize, oh my goodness, I'm not using any of my lungs. I'm not allowing the lungs to do what they do.
Mm.
That just taps you into that original apparatus that was meant to be filled up and released, not to that excruciating point, obviously, but it's kind of like a jump start.
Yeah.
Mm.
And for this to be powerful, the breath needs to drop deeply so that you're not making sounds, but you're experiencing sounds. Mm. But when your breath drops deeply in and you use the tones, and that vibration is opening up the molecules that are holding on to physical blocks and emotional blocks.
Mm.
Just sit down for 20 days and change your life. Because it really does. You want to go in and use these sounds, starting with three of each of the tones. Mm. So you would start with the on the lips. Mm-hmm. So just feel the vibration on the lips. And then just open up to me. Then go on to A, A, O, U, three of these, and then play with them. and just play. And the more you sustain the tone as long as it wants to, you'll see, my goodness, it's dropping deeper. Oh, it's dropping a little deeper. So those are the tones, but there's also the sounds that are very, very powerful. They're connected to the body. And so the next sounds is exhaling on the sound of S. So it's just exhale through your teeth. Don't make the sound of S, just think S. S. Ran out of energy, drop it in. Do three of those. Now what that's doing, that's a vibrational sound that's connected to the lungs. And the lungs store grief. Mm-hmm. And the more you do that sound, the grief will start to move. Mm-hmm. It's also connected to the sinuses and respiratory area, so the nose and sinuses. So if you do 10 or 15 of those, your nose usually starts to run if you have any clogged sinuses. The second sound is blowing out a candle. This sound is connected to the kidneys, and it releases fear from the kidneys. It doesn't mean you're not supposed to feel these things. You absolutely are. They're natural responses, but storing them causes dis-ease. So keeping them moving through these organs is healthy for the organs and eases the organs so they can do their very vital job. That is fear. It's also, believe it or not, attached to the ears. So this vibration clears the ears and the hearing. The next one is the sound of hushing. Shh. So think of hushing a child. Shh. And this sound affects the liver. And the liver holds on to anger and jealousy. Big one. Mm-hmm. Boy, the liver is one giant organ and it has a big job to do. So we want to keep it at ease. So that's the shh. The next one is bringing the air comes up and just taps the soft palate and the back of your throat on a very soft ha. Don't make the sound. Think it. The breath will do the rest. And of course, this opens up the heart and releases hatred and impatience. Think about that. Impatience is a form of hatred toward others and towards yourself. Patience is love toward others and love towards yourself. So we're keeping the heart open and empty to be filled with love and patience. So I think we're up to the sound of who. So it's the sound of the universe, it's in the wind, and it's very powerful. And it's, again, the breath is just coming up and touching the soft palate in the back of the throat on a sound that like this. And that releases anxiety from the stomach. Whenever the tummy starts to sort of knot up on us, I just sit down and I do a dozen of that sound, and it's not magic. It's releasing the vibration in the tummy, releases that sound. It's incredibly powerful. The last one is just a kind of universal sound of he, H-E. And that is just the energy going through all of the different areas of the body, done every day for 20 minutes. Helps you to come together, body and mind, and reconnects you to the wisdom of the body. The wisdom of the body is where our instincts, our intuition, all of that lie. And when the two of them get reconnected through the breath, we're ready for anything, all the possibilities of life.
And that brings us back to what we were talking to LaMonica about, which is being brave enough to show up with your full self, all the time. And I think in order to be able to do that, we need to go through de-learning all those things that don't serve you anymore. Mm-hmm, and that's mm-hmm. That's where things you have just taught us today is so, so incredibly helpful, because I think a lot of people have no idea how to start and where to go and what to do. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts for sharing this. It's going to make a difference for a lot of people. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to say, enjoy the not knowing. Not knowing is scary. But if we were truthful with ourselves, every second of our life is we don't know.
Mm. Yeah.
That's true. It's so true. We do not know.
I think we have to get used to the feeling of that not knowing, which is basically what we've called fear. Mm-hmm. It's just the experience of really being alive right now.
This is a way to start practicing that, and it's a very tangible way. Also, what you said before and what we've talked to LaMonica about, the soft eyes, to meet people's eyes in the street, just practicing that every day. That's easy. We can all do it. And it's just about connection.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming in. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Oh, thank you. Very wonderful to meet you, Laura.
Yes, wonderful to meet you too.
Sandra's in my life forever, but it's always lovely to meet other humans that are interested in finding out more of who they are. So, and getting back to what they were. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Mm. That's what we're all about in coming home.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for helping us come home.
Wow, what Carrie said. The wisdom of the body is where our instincts, our intuition, all of that lie. And when they get reconnected through the breath, we're ready for anything, all the possibilities of life.
Isn't that one of the most beautiful and true statements you have ever heard?
It really is. I mean, I'm just so grateful that we get to do this, Sandra.
Oh, me too, me too. Pinch me. If you want to connect with Carrie or learn more about the topics of today's episode, please go to our website at cominghomepodcast.com. And as always, feel free to drop us a line with your thoughts and reflections about what we touched upon today on Instagram, Facebook, or on our website.
And thank you again to our amazing partner, Tweak Sweets, the candy that has 95% less sugar than regular candy, but in all honesty, actually tastes better. And as a listener, you can go to their website, tweaksweets.com, and use the code COMINGHOME20 and get 20% off a whole purchase.
The editing and sound mixing of this episode is made by the great Rahmatullah Sheikh. Our theme music is made by the amazing Caroline Jungstrom, and our website is designed by the wonderful women at Seth & Austin Communication Bureau.
And let's end this episode with the wise words from LaMonica. Have soft eyes, take in life fully, and enjoy the beauty that surrounds you.
Thank you for listening to Coming Home with me, Sandra Andres, and Laura Bach. Take care, and remember, be kind to yourselves till next time.